Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
I can't believe
there are a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot.
Here we go. Oh, here we go. Listenership suggesting I fixed the Wi-Fi. No, I left my house. No more broadcasting in my house. Going to be back with you Monday, May 22nd, 2023, episode 410 of the Anik and Florian podcast presented by DraftKings. Anyone out there like Bitcoin? At Kenny Florian on Twitter and on Instagram. So, I mean, this isn't breaking news to anybody who's following you on Instagram, so this is fair game. I have a tracker on Kenny now, actually. He was in Miami Beach about 55 minutes from my front door, but I just saw you. I got my Ken Flow fill. But you were in Miami Beach, some sort of Bitcoin convention, Ben yes. Askren, Chris Cyborg, Kenneth Allen Florian. I saw you had a headset on, presumably talking about Bitcoin and maybe a little bit of UFC stuff as well. I mean, yeah. Bro. What is going on, man? What was going on in Miami Beach?
I am all over the shop, dude. So we had the Bitcoin conference put on by Bitcoin Magazine. And I was invited to go. I've always wanted to attend. For whatever reason, I'm usually working or somewhere else. And finally was able to go. And it was awesome, man. The Bitcoin community, they're a special bunch. You will find like from the nerdy crew to like athletic dudes to like fighters, obviously. Ben Askren, Cyborg, as you mentioned, were there. And we were all up at the desk together. And it was cool. It's just cool to see so many different people, so many different backgrounds, so many different minds come together and be pushing for Bitcoin. And it was an awesome weekend.
We haven't talked about Bitcoin on these airwaves in a long time. Certainly during the global pandemic, I was monitoring that shit every day and making a bunch of wayward purchases. I don't even want to tell you the highest price point at which I bought Bitcoin. But we have a lot to get into today, and we're not going to spend any more time on Bitcoin. But if you are in the cryptocurrency space, Ken Flo says it's Bitcoin or nothing else. So take that for what it's worth. So tons of fight announcements for UFC 291. I would like to get into Francis Ngannou signing with the PFL. So much has happened, I think, since we were last on the airwaves. So we could start really in any place. Mackenzie Dern certainly, I think, deserves to lead the show in some respects. But because you're the lead commentator for the PFL, let us begin with Francis Ngannou, who has signed with the Professional Fighters League. And certainly I'm very happy for you. It's very exciting for him on a personal level. It's exciting to think about the possibilities in Africa in terms of this ambassadorship and how much he can do over there. But people who want to see one of the baddest men on the planet competing in a mixed martial arts space aren't necessarily ingesting this as welcome news. He fought Ciryl Gane January 22nd, 2022. And now it seems like best case scenario, maybe we get him midway through 2024 in an MMA setting, which would amount to a 2.5 year layoff. Yep. And it's not as though he's 29 years of age, but humongous news when a heavyweight of this stature, former UFC heavyweight champion, changes promotions. And you'll be calling his next fight in mixed martial arts, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, thank you, man. I'm very excited about it. And thank you for saying what you said. I think that, you know, a big part of this deal was complicated by the fact that Francis Ngannou wanted to compete in boxing as well. And I think that's his intention prior to 2024, which is why we're seeing an even longer layoff. But also, you know, I think he thought that he had, I guess, more to offer the space. Not only did he want to make a little bit more money, but I think he wanted to be more involved and kind of have more of a hands-on role and help with some kind of development and do something for fighters in other places. That place ended up being Africa. I mean, he is such a big deal there and such an inspiration all over the world that I think it ended up becoming a great deal for everybody involved. And, you know, I think the PFL really worked extremely hard to get him. And obviously, just with everything going on and all the competition out there, I wasn't sure what was going to happen, honestly. And the fact that the PFL was, was finally able to get him, I think, shows their commitment to raise the level of mixed martial arts in the PFL. And I'm curious to see who they're going to have him fight in 2024. So always good, I think, for the fighters when you have other options and other organizations that are paying well.
There are a lot of different layers to this, and I think just by nature of who cuts my check, people are going to probably see my take as being pro-UFC, and part of it is just getting to some discussion points when we talk about his opponents and who they might actually be and on what timeline this stuff might actually take place. In terms of the boxing stuff, Kenny, is there going to be a fight against Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder or somebody that I'm not thinking of? It seems as though Anthony Joshua has been dismissive of a fight with Francis Ngannou. That would seem to be the delay, right? He's now enough months removed from his surgery where seemingly the delay to MMA competition would just be the boxing. Is that the way you understand it, that PFL is giving him their blessing to pursue this major boxing payday that that he hoped materializes between now and his PFL debut?
I think that's probably partially responsible for why we're going to see him in 2024 and not in 2023. I think that's something that he wanted to pursue. And candidly, I'm all for fighters trying to make as much money as possible. But what I don't love or what I'm not so excited about all the time is seeing a fighter go outside of their realm of specialty, similar to what Conor McGregor did against Floyd Mayweather and Francis Ngannou, you know, trying to do now here. I think that is, while he's extremely dangerous and one of the hardest hitting punchers in the world, no matter what, boxing or MMA, the art of boxing is something that is very different. And I don't know. I think hopefully people find it intriguing. I don't so as much. I want to see Francis Ngannou do mixed martial arts. That's what he does best. So I'm not too keen on seeing boxers going in MMA and MMA fighters go into boxing. I just think it's a little bit too different. But hey, you know, if he sees the value in it and he has the opportunity to make money, then, you know, go for it.
Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot as if I'm interviewing you today and ask you, what can you tell us about PFL Africa, Ken Flo, right? Because that's not your job. And I want this podcast to continue to be fun for you.
Sure.
But I can tell you, and you probably know this, Kamaru Usman has a regional promotion in Africa, and he has gone to great lengths to put on at least two live events, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I don't know how that compares to what seems to be a grander initiative for the PFL, which is a major promotion, and for Francis Ngannou. But let's see what happens. Let's see exactly what materializes there. But it's very exciting to think about that angle. It's very exciting to think about his opponents making $2 million, right? Because that sort of raises everything for everybody. But who is it going to be? Your heavyweight champion is Ante D'Elia, and his nickname is Walking Trouble. He's 23-5. I'm not going to sit here and denigrate your PFL heavyweight champion and talk about a loss against Marcin Tybura back in 2015. And I'm not trying to put our executive producer, Cody Merrow, on the spot, right? But when I asked Cody in a pinch last week, and Cody, you know how much I love you, I asked him in a pinch, who's the PFL heavyweight champion? He didn't just give me that name immediately, and he was at his last fight.
Right.
So is it going to be Ante D'Elia? Is it going to be a tournament winner? Like, I mean, I guess a lot could materialize in the PFL heavyweight division between now and then, but it would seem as though Francis Ngannou, would he be challenger when he makes his PFL debut against somebody who has some piece of a belt, tournament or otherwise?
You know, listen, I think that there's some valid points there, right? I think Ante D'Elia is a phenomenal heavyweight. Not a lot of people know who he is because maybe a lot of people are following the UFC and not the PFL. That is fair. And in order to put on a big fight, you need to put on a fight between two individuals, you know, hopefully, that people know extremely well. That's what's going to give you that big fight. Now, Ante D'Elia is one of those guys that the UFC was looking at when they were going to sign him. Phenomenal protege under Krokop, judo black belt, excellent grappler, but really known for his knockout power. Now, is that the guy that's going to face Francis Ngannou? I'm not sure. I think it would make it a competitive fight for the most part. I think it would be an interesting fight. But at the end of the day, I think it's the PFL's job and any MMA organization's job to put on fights that people want to see. And I think name power is going to dictate that. So who knows? You know, I think that if I'm a UFC heavyweight or I'm a heavyweight in another organization, I'm going, well, I'm making this amount of money right now, and the PFL is guaranteeing at least $1 million, possibly $2 million for me to go to fight Francis Ngannou, and my contract is maybe up on the line. What would prevent you from doing that besides the contract itself?
Well, yeah. Well, I think that it would be maybe a longer term play with the UFC. There's some reports that Ngannou's deal with the PFL is only a handful of fights, right? And sure, I mean, I'm not even going to start naming a UFC heavyweight that potentially would cross over or be towards the tail end of the contract and have a big enough name. Like, you need the perfect storm, right? Is like,
yeah.
I just think it's ambitious to think that there's going to be some relatively big name UFC heavyweight that's going to take the short term play that is the PFL. But I love Francis Ngannou. I'm very happy that it's the PFL because Ken Flo can get me tickets. No, but I think it makes a lot of sense. And I just hope that the big fight materializes for him on the boxing side, because yeah, otherwise there were just a lot of big fights that could have happened in the UFC. Now, Eric Nixick, and forgive me for not crediting the platform, has come out and said that the UFC said to them at one point in time that they couldn't even get a hold of John Jones for 2 months, you know. So I do think there is blame to be levied on several sides when it comes to the Francis Ngannou John Jones fight not materializing. But big picture, if you're a mixed martial arts fan and you're a Francis Ngannou fan, in the context of him being an MMA fighter, him taking 2.5 years off as the baddest man on the planet is fruitless. And I understand that he had an injury and that's a big chunk of that. But, you know, this is what I think a lot of people expected to be the resolution, and we'll see how it plays out. But hopefully we're talking first or second quarter 2024, because, you know, I'm as impatient as like an 11-year-old kid right now for Francis Ngannou back in a mixed martial arts setting. All right. So the UFC coming strong on that same day or the day after with some UFC 291 fight announcements. Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje. I thought this could be a pay-per-view main event. Now they've sort of upped the ante even more. They're putting the BFM title attached to it. What are your thoughts on the rematch between Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje? First fight between these two was April of 2018. It was a main event on Fox. Only the third UFC fight at the time for Gaethje, 20th for Dustin Poirier. Poirier, a slight favorite right now on DraftKings Sportsbook for the second act against Gaethje. Your thoughts on that main event in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of the BMF belt. You know, it's a little gimmicky. It's kind of WWE-ish, but I am a huge fan of that fight. Obviously, they have fought before. These are two dudes that, if there are any dudes out there in the UFC, they are absolutely worthy of that title. I mean, those guys come to fight. Those are two dudes that any organization can rely on to go out there and fight. They're going to move forward. They're going to look for a finish. And it's just going to be nonstop action. I mean, there's no way that fight can't be boring. I'd be very surprised if it does go the distance. If it does go the distance, we're going to have another classic fight between those two. So I think Gaethje has made huge improvements since then. I think it's a fascinating fight, man, and one that's going to deliver insane action, destined to be a classic for sure.
So the question beckons, does the attachment of the BMF belt move the pay-per-view needle? I think we all would argue when they did it for Nate Diaz and Jorge Gamebred Masvidal the first time they had done it, I think it was UFC 244 in 2019. The Rock was the one who ended up putting the strap on Jorge Masvidal. Yeah. You got to think that that sold a few pay-per-view buys. I'm not sure if it does in this case. I thought this fight could stand alone without it. Yeah, I mean, I guess the pure sports fan in me wonders aloud, like, do you then defend the BMF belt, right? Because at 155 pounds, the Islam Makhachev-Alexander Volkanovski rematch has legs. But if Beneil Dariush beats Islam Makhachev, most people believe that Islam Makhachev is going to fight Beneil Dariush. So Gaethje and Poirier need to settle this business. Whomever wins might still have to wait a little bit to challenge for that undisputed lightweight title. They both had multiple cracks at that. So we'll see what happens. You know, I don't have a huge issue with the BMF belt, but I do wonder sometimes if that belt will like ever be defended, or is it truly as cosmetic as we are led to believe. Also of note, Ken Flo, Alex Pereira making a quick turn, not at 185 pounds though, fighting Jan Błachowicz. The former UFC light heavyweight champion Błachowicz has not fought since that split draw with Magomed Ankalaev. That was December of 2022. So Alex Pereira was knocked out by Israel Adesanya last month, if I'm not mistaken. And this dude has a massive following. Huge fan support for Alex Pereira, not just in Brazil, but here in the United States and globally. How about the quick turn for Alex Pereira and taking on the former 205-pound champion here July 29, Kit?
I'm not really surprised. I think this is a guy who's now making a decent check, man. Yeah, he's got to be getting paid right now. And I think as former champion of the UFC at 185 pounds, he absolutely deserves it. And I think the guys at 205 pounds are going to find out what it's like to face a world-class striker in Alex Pereira. I think that he's going to be even better in that weight class. I think that there's better stylistic matchups for him. I think he's going to have an even better chin because he's not going to have to go through that brutal weight cut. I think he's going to bring even more power. I think it's a fantastic fight against Jan Błachowicz. Now, I don't know exactly what the odds are or anything like that, but I do think Błachowicz is dangerous. There's no question about that. But I don't think Pereira is going to be undersized like Adesanya was. I think that Pereira is going to have the ability to kind of just fill out his frame a lot more. I think his bone structure is a little thicker than Adesanya's. His head, everything in general just seems to be more suited at 205 pounds. So I'm curious, but I'm very optimistic for someone like Pereira.
Well, and I hear that you did not bury the lead because he probably makes a half a million bucks to show, right? You do the math, yeah. April, May, June, right, July. Sure. Make $1 million at the very least in 4 months. And he was the champion making pay-per-view points for that title defense against Israel Adesanya. So Dustin Poirier right now, minus 120 on DraftKings Sportsbook. Justin Gaethje, the even money underdog. Do you have any idea to venture a guess, Ken Flo? Jan Błachowicz and Alex Pereira, co-main event UFC 291. Who do you think's the betting favorite?
Oh, man. I mean, I think if Pereira is the underdog, people need to jump on that.
He's the dog.
Is he? So Błachowicz, what, plus 150?
Thank you for not reading Cody's comments in the chat room. Cody, I got my notes in front of me. I'm trying to stump the floor.
Yeah, minus 150. Okay, that's right there.
Błachowicz minus 150. Alex Pereira plus 130. So many incredible fights announced at UFC 291. Tony Ferguson, Bobby Green, Paulo Costa fighting Ikram Alaskarov, the guy who just made his UFC debut recently, who fought Khamzat Chimaev back in the day. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson against Michel Pereira. The Black Beast, Derek Lewis, fighting pays out heavyweight Michael Chiesa, Kevin Holland. I mean, nice. You know, we're trying to clean it up for the children, but the UFC really did pull out its Johnson and say, okay, look at UFC 291. It's like seven main events coming up for Salt Lake City at the end of the month of July. All right. A lot of people believe that our next segment is the best part of this weekly podcast, now bi-weekly. Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
And as I understand it, Ray Longo celebrated a huge birthday on Saturday, May 20th.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, it
was 40 years old.
It was a
you
biggie.
Look great, Rick.
Kenny was on point, baby. Kenny, I'll never forget that text. Very nice. Thank you. Thank
absolutely.
You, John.
What
thank
was Kenny's text? What was Kenny's text?
Just the facts, right? Just the facts.
Yeah, he sent a very heartfelt text. But wait a minute. How could this be everybody's favorite segment when you just said the UFC pulls out its Johnson? Yeah. I mean, if people aren't tuning in for that, and then there's something wrong. Because when the UFC pulls out, it's Johnson.
Yeah, well, did they not?
They pull out
is it octagonal, by the way? Isn't it octagonal, Johnson? I don't know what it looks like. Yeah.
Have you ever seen that Johnson, John?
I don't know if I've seen it in the flesh, but let's just say they pull it out a lot.
So listen. They could pull it out as long as they don't beat you over the head with it.
That's right. There you go.
It's all good.
No one needs that.
So, well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Did you go out for an Italian dinner on your birthday?
No, I went out for steak, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. All right. How do you get your steak cooked? I mean, we know you spit out the fat and leave it on the side of the plate, but how do you get it cooked?
Oh, I'm going to tell you something. You guys are going to think I'm lying. Now that you said that, because thank God that was one of the things I wanted to tell you today. I go out, maybe it's me at this point. Kenny, I go out when I take the kid out, Justin Montalvo.
Okay.
You know, we'll talk about what's going on for the future. So we go out to eat a nice Vietnamese place. They bring out like an appetizer, chicken wings. And there's another guy there too, his friend Jeff. And I eat my chicken wing. I throw it on the plate. Right, like 10 minutes later, he's like, "Somebody left some meat on the bone."
I know.
Right? So I'm like,
"What is with your fighters?
No,
they're savages,
Kenny." So now I see the other guy. He thinks it's the other guy's chicken wing, which I don't even know what difference that would make. He took the chicken wing. He started eating it again. He cleaned the rest of the... I'm like, this can't be happening. Is it me? I'm not even kidding around. I go, this is weird. But he's announcing it. So Weidman made a mistake. He's actually looking at an old chicken bone sitting there for 10 minutes and decides it's not properly cleaned right.
So Justin Montalvo is proofreading your chicken wing, is what you're telling our audience.
Yes.
So, like, my wife sometimes will leave some meat on the bone. You know, I'm not afraid to go proofread her chicken wing, but she leaves a lot of meat on the bone. Sounds like Montalvo's one of those guys, too. But, yeah, you're fighters, man. Like,
no, I mean, weird.
It's starving.
Weird.
Gosh, it's like, cave these guys.
Cavemen.
Well, listen, your wife's a little different than another guy, for sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm so glad that we got to that. I'm glad that we got to that. It was something that you wanted to bring up.
I already have forgot. Hey, a shout out to Santino DeFranco, who also has a birthday on May 20th. So I knew there was something I loved about his coaching.
There you go.
Now I know he's got the birthday gene going. I love it. So happy birthday, Santino.
He is significantly younger than you. Why don't you tell the audience how old you are, Raymond?
What?
Oh, I'll look it up if you don't want to let us know. How old are you now, Ray?
No, you're muted. I can't hear you. Cody,
I will tell you that my worst birthday was 40. That was a tough one. Ray Longo, born May 20. No, we don't have it here. So, I'm going to guess you're like 61. Yeah. Feel like we celebrated number 60 pretty recently. You look good, though, right? I mean, everybody says it. Everybody acknowledges.
I do feel good, but no, I turned 65, which is hard to even say, man. It sucks.
65. Wow. Well,
isn't that crazy?
Man, it's just
how
a number.
You feel.
How old are you guys? 43, you said? Something like that? 42? 41?
I'm going to be 47 in a few days, man.
Wow. So you're close to Matt. He's going to be 49. Isn't that crazy, Kenny? You're almost 50. I mean, that's nuts.
How'd that happen?
You were elbowing guys, I feel like, yesterday, cutting them all wide open. Unbelievable.
He's trying to turn 47, and you're creeping him up to 50, you know?
Well, now
if he has another kid, he's going to feel awful. I mean,
I feel like I'm getting close there, man. Damn, it's wild.
So, wait, you had your first kid. How old were you?
What are you trying to do to the guy, Ray?
I'm asking him
42, my first kid at 42. Yeah. Late. I started late.
We had a lot of shit to do.
I do everything late.
Yeah. Man, I thought I was late at like 36.
Before that point in time, I had my son, my third and final child, 10 days before I turned 40. So I was a little bit, but I had my first daughter when I was like 31 or 32.
Oh, I got it. Okay. Yeah. It's,
But
it gets crazy as they get older and you're limping around all over the place.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
My son's going to own me.
Oh, and yeah. I hope your son's doing better. I didn't even know about that. I'm sorry when we talked, too. I felt horrible. I wanted to give you a call on that. But
thank you, man.
Won't bother you,
but slowly but surely, we're getting there. But I appreciate that.
No, that's good.
All right. So, but I did just want to get your thoughts quickly, if I could, on the UFC, you know, pulling out its figurative Johnson around the time of the Francis Ngannou news or not. But they announced UFC 291 for Salt Lake City, Utah. And they say, you know what? We're going to give you Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje. Jan Błachowicz is going to welcome Alex Pineda to the light heavyweight division. Tony Ferguson's back against Bobby Green. Oh, is that not good enough? How about we'll give you Paulo Costa against Ikram Aliskarov. Derek Lewis on the card. Your guy, WB. Michael Chiesa against Kevin Holland. It's just, if you're a UFC fan, it's, I mean, I can't, I just got dozens of ticket requests for July 29th as soon as all these fight announcements came in. So I wanted to ask your thoughts on all that, Ray.
Well, I guess Francis Ngannou had to put his Johnson back in his pants after that. I mean, I think that's is that the moral of the story?
Well, and that could take a long time.
How dare you, John?
That could take a long time. I'm just saying. You know?
Yeah, no, that's crazy. No, they're I'll tell you one thing about the UFC. Come on, they make great matchups. I mean, it's not like a boxing thing. You know, they're going to fight everybody, any place, anytime. And sometimes as much as it might be. I think it's great. I think it's great what they're doing, 100%.
What are your thoughts on the Francis Ngannou signing with the PFL?
Look, I'm happy for anything Francis does. I think Francis is a guy that took a stand. You know, he's probably a little wacky in his demands, obviously. Some of those things seem a little excessive. But, he took a stand, and I agree with Francis. I think sometimes you deal with these people from other countries, and you get to see, like, a different perspective on things. And I think, like what Francis said, I fulfilled my contract. I did what you wanted. I'm gone. Why can't you be happy for me? Why are you always taking digs at me? You know, so, you know, business is, you know, crazy at times like that, but I like Francis. I think I assume he's difficult to deal with a little bit, but he's taking his shot. He knows he's got a small window, and I think it's good for everybody what he's doing.
All right, I have some Aljamain Sterling stuff, so we're going to hit you with the heavy stuff.
Let's go. Let's
do it. Then we'll get into Mackenzie Dern and Anthony Fluffy Hernandez and everything that transpired inside the octagon over the weekend. But after this UFC live event at the UFC Apex, UFC President Dana White was asked about Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley, which seems at the very least verbally agreed to as the headlining bout August 19th, UFC 292 in Boston. That would amount to a very quick turn for Aljamain Sterling. I wondered aloud at the realism of this or how realistic it was before it was announced. So I want to read you some quotes and then we'll get some comments from the Godfather Ray Longo. So here's what Aljo had to say on his podcast, Weekly Scraps. I told them, yes, verbally agree, but of course my body has to agree. Going to try to make this happen. This would be a sick, insane turnaround. He went on to say, I'm still injured with my legs banged up. My bicep still sucks. I'm supposed to get another MRI on that. I'm trying to get to this fight in August. We talked a little bit about it, and we'll try to see if we can make it happen, but my leg is still super sensitive to the touch. I hope I'm not ruining anything by me saying that, but guys, I did just fight. And then Dana White said, I think we got his manager on the phone and stuff like that. It's just Aljo's one of those guys that just can't get out of his own way. Apparently, he's in for the fight. Why he said that, who knows? The fight is on. The fight is absolutely, positively on.
Right. What do you want? So, what do you want?
Well, no, I mean, I would be remiss if we didn't ask you here on a Ray Longo Minute about all of that. But no, I'm not asking you to tell us as to whether or not this is happening. But I wondered aloud at the viability of this quick turn for Aljo, and now it seems like he has some concerns.
Listen, man, I don't. Everybody could do business the way they want to do it. Let's backtrack to Marab. He beats Jan in a 5-round fight. Really, I think one of the best performances against the top rated guy that you could see. How he shut him down completely for 5 rounds, nonstop. You know, they offered him a fight 5 or 6 weeks after that.
Right.
I mean, you think that's right? After a 5-round fight like that, you think that's right. They don't like the guy, you know, period. So now Aljo is a little longer. So I think it's more acceptable. But I didn't know O'Malley was coming in the ring that night. I mean, they had it set up. They set that thing up, right? So nobody knows O'Malley's coming in. They had an agenda, and they were going to force it on everybody. So, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But there's definitely not a signed contract. And Aljo said he would fight. He did say he would fight. He just wanted to let his body, give me a week or two to see if my body heals up. That's not good enough for everybody. So they just got to announce the fight. But the fight will happen for sure, and he will beat the shit out of O'Malley. You know, I don't care how he feels.
Yeah,
that's my take. But
Kenny, what are your thoughts on?
They're gonna motivate him to a different level just by doing so. I'm on board. You know, I mean, you listen to like O'Malley's team. I think they were saying, you know, he'll have trouble making the weight. You know, he'll probably be a little banged up. That's what I heard. I didn't vet this or do any due diligence on it. But, you know, don't you think you want the best Aljamain Sterling? Isn't that what you want? Or you want the guy that's banged up? You know, and according to Aljo, O'Malley could have taken the fight instead of Cejudo. He didn't want it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you
know,
Kenny, Tim Welch, chief corner for Sean O'Malley, had a lot of glowing things to say about Aljamain Sterling, but it does seem as though the timeline is being manipulated a little bit. I'm not even going to suggest by whom, but what are your thoughts, Kenny, on Sterling making this quick turn and putting his belt on the line so soon after defending it?
I definitely think it's feasible. I don't think this is a huge ask for the UFC, but I will give the fighter's perspective on this. And I think that a fighter works so damn hard to become a champion. And obviously it is a rare few that will ever make it to that level. And when you finally do, you want to be able to give your best performance, right? You want to covet that belt. You want to be the best at what you do, and you want to be as close to 100% as possible. So I think Aljo is trying not to give any advantages to his opponents as he can, and rightfully so. Without he deserves that as champion. But I love this matchup for him. I think Sean O'Malley is an extremely dangerous striker. He's an excellent fighter. He's tough as nails. But this is not a good matchup for him. Aljo, you know, obviously is one of the best at getting you to the mat, controlling you, and finishing you from there. So I'm curious to see how it all goes down. But and I think that's why O'Malley took this time off. I think he realized the challenge that was in front of him. I'm 100%. Sure he is behind the scenes working on his wrestling and on his grappling to prepare for this monster in Sterling.
100%. John, you know, I'll say this. Look, Aljo's an overthinker for sure. He's going to think everything out. Like Kenny said, he wants to be the best Aljo when he goes in there. And that's where he's coming from. So I do agree with Kenny. It's feasible. But, you know, the guy is he's the champ of the division. I mean, if I tell you he was enjoying the shit out of that, like he was really enjoying himself. And that's what he likes to do. He's set in his ways. He likes to enjoy himself after the fight. And I think, like, asking for September wasn't a big ask, you know what I mean? But, again, when you have an agenda and you got to hold to it, then you got to do what you got to do. It's just a weird – I think it's weird that he had no say in it. And he is going to fight. He does want to fight. That's not the thing. He was in the gym yesterday. But he was having a great time, and I think he wanted to enjoy the fruits of his labor. And that's what he does, and that's how he gets himself ready for the next fight. It's like – work hard, play hard. I mean, and that's it. He, you know, to cut him short a week or two, you know, or three, it for him at this stage of his career kind of sucks to him. And I don't want to talk for him either. I really don't. But that's my interpretation. I know him good enough now to know that, you know, he's going to look at every possible angle. And like Kenny says, he wants to give himself the best advantage. And he's a thinker. He's a thinker on every aspect of the game, and including this. So, you know, the fight, I'm going to say the fight's going to happen. And that's it, you know. And I hope he does what we all know he can do. That's the best form of voicing your opinion, is just to get that job done. And then they're really stuck. It looks like they don't want him. You know, when you start thinking, you know, you're the champion and nobody really wants you, it's not a good feeling, you know. So I don't know. That's the way I'm
looking. Thankfully, he's mentally forged by a lot of his professional life experience. But the extra 3, 4, 5 weeks is a big deal. And this whole thing is a big deal. And I hesitate to use the verb bully, but you can be sure Leon Edwards was not going to be bullied into fighting on a certain timeline,
right?
To headline a pay-per-view in July, right? After going 25 minutes with Kamaru Usman, right? I mean, Aljamain Sterling just went 25 hard minutes with Henry Cejudo, right?
With a guy that
and it's like, it's almost
combat.
Like, it'd almost be better for Aljo, I feel like, if he had a cut, right? It'd buy him a little time. But no, hey, I'm not suggesting either that this can't be something that is optimal for Sterling, right? To stay in shape and have less recreation time. And I think you should listen to Kenny more than you should listen to me, but it is pretty interesting, right? That he is turning around so quickly. And it seems like the UFC is getting a few of these guys to do it. Now, Alexander Volkanovsky is a little bit of an outlier. He tells us in the fighter meeting in Perth that he wants to fight four or five times this year. But you still had to get Yair Rodriguez to make a relatively quick turn. And that has not been historically his pattern. So I don't know. I think there's a lot there.
Absolutely, John. Sorry to cut you off. I think location has a lot to do with it as well, right? There's a lot of fighters that when they fight are thinking about things like taxes. You know, what state is going to give me the best tax rate where I fight? And that's why Las Vegas is so popular. You know, I know GSP hated fighting in Montreal for that reason. He was a huge star there. But every time he went there, it was like 60-70% of his pay was gone, you know. So anyway,
yeah, you're Kenny, you're 100% Aljo. Look, he's going to think about everything, and that's another big part of it. Obviously, everybody, that's why they want to fight in Vegas. There's no state tax. If you're making money, that saves you a couple hundred grand, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
at this stage of the game, that's big money. I mean, like, it's almost like found money if you fight, because you're gonna have it taken away at another place. So that's another part of it also. I think you're dead on with that, Kenny, too.
So Mehrab Dwalishvili had surgery. You're probably happy to see him get fixed, I would assume.
I really am, because I'll tell you, I didn't even know about the injury before the fight, but when he came to the gym, yeah, he had, Weidman has it, Matt still has it. Matt never got it fixed. He said he could never. The problem is when you punch correctly, huge pain. So they start altering the way they're punching, what knuckles they're hitting with. And that, all three of them had the same thing. Weidman got it fixed. Now Mehrab got it fixed, which I'm happy for, because it's going to make a big difference.
All right. I want to talk to you quickly about this UFC fight night before we get you out of here. Sorry about that click clack. I think that's on Longo's end. What do you got going on there, Raymond? I shouldn't be blaming Ray. I should be careful with the minute, man. You hear that click clack, Ray, or no? Oh man. It's not you, huh? All right. Well, I mean, it could be me for all I know. I'd like to ask you boys about Mackenzie Dern. And sometimes I fall victim to the moment and I get a little bit too headliney when it comes to my analysis and I start anointing Mackenzie Dern, Kenny. But man, like, she looked like a world champion to me in a division that makes it very hard to become just that. And then I feel like there's some segment of the people that's like, yeah, but she's fighting Angela Hill, who's a 500 fighter, who's 38 years of age. What were your thoughts, Ken Flo, on Mackenzie Dern? And then we'll get some thoughts from Raymond as well.
Yeah, I like the intensity. I like the intensity and her ability to combine the striking with her takedowns and her ability to get to the ground. She kept a fast pace. Just walking into the octagon, to me, that looked like that was the best shape that I've seen her in physically. So it was great to see her go out there and get that kind of performance. Now, there was reckless times. I mean, she was a little reckless. I love the aggression. I think it's great. Is that a style that's going to allow her to beat maybe some of the elite top two in that division? I'm not sure. I don't think so at this point. But her ground game is good enough to get it done against anybody in that division. But just to see her getting that much more comfortable on the feet and not give an F on the feet, I think is a huge step forward for her. And she can always work on the technical stuff, but sometimes that mental stuff becomes that biggest hurdle. And I did not see that in this fight. Angela Hill, you know, say what you want about her record, maybe her age, whatever. She's tough. She's going to be a tough out for anybody. And the fact that she went out there, was able to trade with her, exchange some good takedowns with her and all that stuff, and put out that pace for 25 minutes, I thought was a phenomenal performance. And that was one of those fights where I love being proven wrong. I picked Angela Hill in that one, but Mackenzie Dern, man, awesome.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think Kenny hit it right. Most of the things I'm saying, I love the aggression. I love what I saw. And she got 25 minutes against a really good striker, 35 years old or not. Utmost respect for Angela Hill in that fight, too, because she had to really go through a lot of adversity in a lot of different spots. We thought she'd have the stand-up, you know, advantage. She got rock bad, you know, where she turned her into a wrestler at times, which is crazy, right? But, man, I like what I saw out of Mackenzie Dern. I like attitude, man, and that attitude is spot on. Like, you're not going to deny me. I'm coming forward. If you can't knock me out, you're getting knocked out. If I don't knock you out, I can submit you. I think that was a huge fight for Mackenzie Dern. I'm on the bandwagon, and I think she's got a good shot. I'd love to see her step it up. And go. But that's an extra 25 minutes against a really good striker. And she showed she didn't give a fuck, man. I love that intensity, man. And she looks like she throws hard. And again, she did keep it up for 25 minutes. I thought it was a great fight for both. But honestly, even for Angela Hill in defeat, got to respect that girl. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, she's fought the best of the best. I thought probably got robbed a couple of times. She should have won the fight. So she was right in there with her. That's a good gauge, you know, and she didn't fight like a 35-year-old. You know, she looked good. It's just that she got overpowered. Mackenzie Dern looked huge in there next to her.
Yeah. And I think Angela is 38, actually, but you're right. And you put her career, I think, in the proper context in terms of having to pass this test. Gatekeeper can be sort of a negative connotation. But yes, buckets of respect for Angela Hill in defeat. But it is interesting to look at Mackenzie Dern in terms of the career progression and everything else. She wants to fight with Thug Rose Namajunas. I think that makes a shit ton of sense if Rose comes back in the not too distant future. But people leaned into a lot of what Mackenzie Dern had to say during fight week about not having Jason Perillo at her disposal because he was with Luke Rockhold for times and the divorce Dern, right? Everything else. And yes, I mean, she was able to channel that anger in the right mean-spirited way. And if she can fight like that, she's going to be a real problem. All right, Raymond, that's all I got for you today, my man.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah, I did send you a check this week. So
really? You know, wow, yeah. This is phenomenal.
Oh, good. Guys, all right. Why, extra great rounds not paying you?
But they're actually paying, believe it.
Oh, okay, they're paying you.
We're
now
in
okay
the we're all in right the pro. No, John, we're in the process. It's
okay,
a, but all it's right more on my end. So
okay, be, all right. Well, care. Make sure when we send you a check that your wife sees it. Okay, and we'll talk to you next week.
all right. Get your Johnson back in your pants, both of you guys. I insist.
I'll do that now. Thanks,
thank you
Rick
very much. All right. Thank God we're only here from the waist. Thank God we're only here from the neck up. That's all I got. Yeah,
that's the truth.
I'd be in a shitload of trouble. Take it easy.
Get out of here. Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. Kenny, Mackenzie Dern, Thug Rose Namajunas. It just makes a lot of sense. And if I could just take you back to Mackenzie Dern's first UFC fight, I believe it came against Ashley Yoder. And we were told at times during training camp, she would stop sparring and she would start crying, right? Like, this has been a transition for a decorated world-class jiu-jitsu player that maybe not enough has been made about. The demons, personally, professional, and demons isn't the right word, but just the hurdles that she had to overcome to get to this place. And I do think there were a lot of people who were questioning her mentally or otherwise going into this fight, just given all of the life circumstance. And then to have a performance like that, I know she didn't get a finish, but bro, like, I'm very excited about Mackenzie Dern, and I hope it's not just a recency bias that is causing my enthusiasm.
No, I don't think it is. I think that people forget about all the things that you got to deal with outside of the cage. Life can hit you way harder than what you experience in the octagon. And I think she's been dealing with a lot. And anytime you're able to bounce back from something like that, John, I think it does amazing things for you, both personally and professionally as a fighter. And I think this is the kind of performance that I think is going to buoy her and give her that much more confidence. And, you know, I think also her team, her coaches, her dad, who's a big part of her training, it's going to lift everybody's spirits. I think that was a huge performance, came at a great time. She did exactly what she said she was going to do too. And you don't see that too often in this sport, and really happy for Mackenzie, who is, you know, for me, every time I've met her, she has been an absolute sweetheart. And has done great things in the jiu-jitsu world, representing all the jiu-jitsu guys all over the world extremely well at a high level, and very, very happy for her.
A lot of repetitions now in MMA, a lot of experience, 5-round experience accrued by Mackenzie Dern, and perhaps she's just reaping the benefits of those training camps and the ensuing fights. So big things for Mackenzie Dern and Anthony Fluffy for Hernandez. Like, best of luck fading that guy at the window. What a stud, huh?
Dude, like, he's an animal, man. Like, I think his pressure is as good as any Dagestani wrestler out there. And, you know, I don't know about, you know, whether he's got that high-level wrestling background or not, but he fights like it. The way he puts it all together is phenomenal. He's non-stop. There are world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, John, who are competing in the UFC and other organizations who don't exhibit the same level of confidence of going for submissions like Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. And to me, that is awesome. He has that special quality, not to mention a pace that is something to behold, man. That dude is a beast. Again, I think he got everyone's attention when he was able to beat Rodolfo Vieira, but he's legit, man. That dude is absolutely legit. I will watch a fight with Anthony Fluffy Hernandez every single time out.
And it seemed like maybe he was going to get his first UFC main event here, right? But they did delay Dern and Hill and elevated that fight. But Anthony Fluffy Hernandez is going to get a big fight at 85, and he's certainly got a fan in me. As does new Mansa Joaquin Buckley with a big highlight. Carlos Diego Fajeda getting a bonus for his knockout of Michael Johnson. A lot of big winners over the weekend at that live event in Las Vegas. But we're going to go back out to the guest line right now. We're very happy to be joined right on the screws, this guy, noon Eastern time today, and we appreciate that. This is a man who almost entered the UFC in 2012, courtesy of the Ultimate Fighter Live. But when he ultimately did, he made up for lost time. 21-time UFC veteran Drew Dober is with us. It's good to see you, man. Just elevating the fucking handsome on this program right out of the chute. How you doing, buddy?
I mean, I didn't get the hat headset memo, so I'm underdressed. But
so I wore a hat this week. Everybody in the comments last week was suggesting that I was stoned for the program. I was having an issue with my eyes. People are going to believe what they're going to believe. So, yeah, a little self-conscious today. We went with the Hurley hat. But it's good to see you, my man. And so I was just looking at sort of the trajectory of your career earlier this morning. So after you tried out for the Ultimate Fighter Live in 2012, you ultimately go 6-1 regionally to get into the UFC. But I want to take you back to August 10th. 2012, you're in Omaha and you lose a unanimous decision to Will Brooks, right? So that makes you 1-1 post Ultimate Fighter, right? And I'm taking you back to this point in time because I'd imagine it was maybe a low point. You'd go on to win 5 in a row and punch your ticket to the UFC. But what can you tell me in your hometown how you were feeling mentally, physically about the future after that 2012 loss to Will Brooks?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, being the goal of the undefeated world champion was kind of out the window. But we had to recess and figure out, you know, what it's going to take to get my name on the headlights. And, you know, you're either, you know, with that undefeated record coming in with the UFC eyes, or you got to steal that from somebody else. And I was at a point where it's like, all right, the UFC knows I exist. We got to try to steal that hype from somebody else. And so we just started calling up promotions, looking at the biggest, baddest competition. And we found it and eventually got my way into the UFC.
So that fifth win on that winning streak that ultimately got you to the UFC, what do you remember about that fight and then the timeline of when the call from the big show ultimately came in?
Right. So there was a undefeated knockout artist in Tony Sims here in Denver, Colorado. I mean, he was finishing every fight knockout in the first round. And there was word that the UFC had eyes on the cat. And he was looking for a fight. And so I just raised my hand. I was like, all right, if I can't beat that guy, I'll just beat that guy. And we flew out to Denver, Colorado in enemy territory. And man, he put the beating on me in that first round. I could see why he was finishing fights in the first. But we made it out of that first round. And then I saw some weakness, some niche in his armor. And yeah, he didn't feel confident going into that second, and we put that beating on him and got the split decision, which I stole the limelight and eventually got that call 2 weeks later.
Oh, it was 2 weeks later. So what do you remember about getting that call? Was it a manager or somebody?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the day after that fight in Denver, Colorado was my birthday. So I was neck deep in ice cream and cake, just enjoying my life post-fight. I mean, I was sitting in a diner with, you know, the most ridiculous food in front of me when I got that call, like, hey, do you want to fight in the UFC in 2 weeks? And I was like, oh man, what weight? And luckily we were get the call at 170. So we moved up in weight class, 170, 2 weeks notice. And we put on the best performance we could.
Drew Dober with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I promise I'm going to let Kenny in here. I just am sort of going back before we can move forward. And I feel like I can ask you this question now because you fought 21 times in the UFC. You've won 12 fights in the UFC. But just some more adversity that you had to overcome, right? You get to the UFC and then just one win in your first five UFC starts, right? A lot of random circumstances, the no contest. So, but yet you still persevere and look at you now, man. You're trajecting to fight like 30 plus times in the UFC.
Yeah, I'm just writing the story that it doesn't need to be perfect. It doesn't need to be pretty. But if you stay at it, you can reach that top. And man, we're still pushing. And, you know, we got some setbacks here and there, some interesting scenarios. But we're creating stories every time we're in that cage, whether it's a win, a loss, a no contest. And I mean, I'm having a blast doing it. And yeah, like I said, they're showing everyone that it doesn't need to be perfect.
Drew, you know, you're still young at 34 years old. You know, how many more years do you see yourself doing this?
I mean, I see him on that path of Stephen Thompson. I mean, I've always been a late bloomer, late mature. And so at 34, I feel like I'm 24. So, I mean, we could probably see fights up in the 40s.
Let's go.
I'm with you on that. That's awesome. Hey, great fight around the corner in your division. One of the guys that you faced, Beneil Dariush, taking on Charles Oliveira. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Beneil, man. How do you see this fight going down? How do you break that one down?
You know, I think a lot of people sleep on Beneil. He is probably one of the most well-rounded and composed individual in the lightweight division. Charles Oliveira has been at the top. He started feeling himself. He had that unfortunate loss with Islam Makhachev. But I feel Charles Oliveira relies on you to come forward, relies on you to take risks and make mistakes. And Beneil Dariush is not the guy that you can rely on. He's so composed, so technical, and so well-rounded that you know, I see him picking and choosing his battles inside that octagon against Charles Oliveira. And I have Beneil Dariush winning by decision, just by picking and playing and out-grappling, honestly.
And that's a three-round fight, right? Three-round co-main event. Yeah, that is not five rounds. So, all right, I thought of you recently. So Jared Gordon, right? You probably know where I'm going. He has this no contest against Bobby Green on April 22nd. So Gordon goes out, wakes up, right? Asks what happened, right? And it ends up being a no contest. So now about 6 weeks later, he steps in to face Jim Miller because Ludovic Klein can't go. And I guess I bring it up in the context of your fight against Matt Frivola, because I know you respect the stoppage maybe more than I do, right? But you never went out. The fight lasted 4 minutes and 8 seconds. And yeah, I mean, I know for you, the timeline probably for the Jim Miller fight just doesn't match up the way it did for Jared Gordon. And you're a bigger lightweight than Jared Gordon and all of that. But I ask you in a broader sense, right? The Jim Miller-Drew Dober fight to me makes a lot of sense. Two big names, two guys who I think have been a big part of the history of the UFC lightweight division. You know, what is your appetite for taking on a big name fight like that? And how much time realistically do you need to step in for the right opponent?
I mean, we're looking at possibly fighting at the end of July, August. And so Jim Miller, I mean, that fight would have been beautiful. I've said yes to Jim Miller before. The fight hasn't come to fruition. Yeah, just getting all that experience and in the octagon, it would be tons of fun. But I also said yes to Jared Gordon as well. You know, I'd love to, you know, fight the real winner of the Patty fight. You know, that'd be a fun one. But for me, it's not about who. It's a matter of when, and I'm trying to stay active. So, you know, we're clearing that suspension from the last get-go, and man, we're looking at trying to find somebody to say yes, you know, in August.
So I mentioned your fight with Matt Frivola, and you know, I try not to be uber critical of the officials here on the show, right? But I feel like in a situation like that, Drew Dober's history with 26 professional mixed martial arts wins, his penchant for being in wars and rallying and winning those fights should have afforded him at least one extra beat in that setting. Would you at least agree with me on that?
Yeah, I was a little surprised when Herb stepped in. I mean, I was coherent, I was aware, and I was defending myself. So when Herb stepped in, I was a little surprised, very upset, just because we know, you know, I'm able to come back from fights and win spectacularly.
But you take the high road, right? Like you just said you were upset, but I think Drew Dober's fan base would suggest that you didn't go hard in the paint at Herb Dean, and perhaps that's just not your nature, you know, but I remember texting you that seemed like I was more upset about it than you were.
Yeah. You know, I try to, I mean, Herb's doing his job and, you know, I was defending myself. I don't know if I was defending myself intelligently, and that's kind of his call and, his job. And, it's more like I try to focus on what I can control. I can't control the ref's decisions. I can just control on getting my hands back to my face and not falling over. And I unfortunately made that mistake. And we just got to live, learn, and grow and move forward.
Yeah. No, that's a good assessment by you. And hey, I mean, Matt Frivola is a friend of the program. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, of course. That's just my my honest opinion. All right. So who's the toughest guy you ever fought, by the way? You probably get asked that question a lot. I mean, you've fought almost 40 times. Who's the toughest guy?
I mean, as of now, like tough is a matter of like a detailed question, like tough as far as the most well-rounded, tough as far as the hardest hitter or the person that I couldn't get out of my face. I mean, as of statistically, like Islam Makhachev was, you know, the most well-rounded fighter that I've ever competed against. But as far as the toughest, man, that fight with Tony Sims right before the UFC was probably, I got knocked down 3 times in the first round. And, you know, just kind of like with the whole Matt Frivola fight, you know, the ref could have stepped in.
Yeah.
But, man, we survived and we had a rally in that second round. And then he came out with a different plan in the third, started taking me down, and we had to do a lot more grappling in the third round. So as far as like human will and really trying to draw it out, like that was probably the toughest fight.
Yeah, it's so interesting talking to fighters, and oftentimes it's those early fights that that really stick with you. All right, so you've had a lot of gym wars with Justin Gaethje, if I can put it that way. And philosophically, it seems like a lot of the elite fighters fall on different sides of this. Dominic Cruz needs months of hard sparring to get ready for the fight. Max Holloway doesn't necessarily spar at all. Yair Rodriguez, I think, is cut from that latter cloth as well. I mean, philosophically, it might be a different answer for yourself versus others. But where do you stand on how much sparring needs to be done to realize success in MMA for you or for another person?
You know, for me, I think sparring is slightly overrated. You know, and the bigger in your career, you got to learn what that feels like, what the fire feels like, how to build on the toughness. But as you know, as we get into the UFC, I mean, I feel like the toughness is already there. We've already gone through the regional circuit. We've been hit before. We all know all that. And so I think people should focus their energy on the technical aspects of training, the repetitions, the drills, the, you know, sparring is so chaotic and so sporadic. You know, it's really hard to like judge on like what you're getting better at. But I feel like everyone's just fighting to prove themselves that they are better versus getting better. Where in the drills and the pad work and the repetitions, like that is solely based on like just getting better. And so I'm right there with, you know, sparring every once in a while, but you got to focus your energy on the drills and the repetitions.
All right. Two more with Drew Dober before I get you out of here. So you mentioned July or August. I mean, do you have any name on the tip of your tongue, or is it just sort of about getting back in there as soon as medically cleared and as your health will allow?
I mean, we said we would fight Jared Gordon in August, but he took that fight with Jim Miller, which is great for him. Diego Ferreira with his knockout over Michael Johnson. We'll see how soon he wants to get turned around. I was scheduled to fight him twice in 2020. That is a man that's been on my radar for a while. So, you know, we'll see who's available. In the flyweight division, it's hard to get guys to agree to fights. So August is my date. If anybody wants to say yes, I'm willing to exchange.
And is it true you've never had a rematch in 39 professional MMA fights?
Yeah, rematches kind of like they bore me. I mean, whether I won the fight or lost the fight, right? Just like fighting the same guy over and over. It's like, man, we need something new, you know? And I'm not a fan of rematches.
All right. And before I let you go, do you have a kid on the way? Do I remember that from our conversation?
Yes. My wife is about to explode. It's like any day now. A week is the due date. And so it could be happening right now as we speak, you know? So yeah, at any moment we become Daddy Dober, and we'll see how that affects my octagon skills.
And congrats, just wait, man. And just wait till that kid is like 8 and gets to sit down and see some of those Drew Dober highlights with dad. Hey, appreciate the time, man. We very much look forward to you getting back in there in August. And we will talk to you and see your face down the line, I'm sure, brother. But we appreciate a few minutes today, sir.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
See you, Drew.
All right, there he is, Drew Dober with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I didn't know that his wife was literally about to go into labor, but we appreciate Drew being with us here today on the program. Thank you also to Ray Longo. Our executive producer is Cody Merrow. Coming up next week, Brian Petrie is back, and we will look ahead to another UFC fight night in Las Vegas. Kai Kara-France and Amir Albazi, and then, of course, UFC 289 coming pretty quickly. Also, don't forget, before the Ultimate Fighter, I was just in Bristol last week at ESPN. Kenny, it was crazy, by the way, being back in a Bristol studio really? For the first time since I was like 32 years of age. And I would just say the emotions, the nostalgia driving back into that parking lot. I had a little bit of a negative emotion driving into that parking lot because I used to do so many graveyard shifts. I was like having like my life flash before my eyes. But right. Walking into that studio now, 44 years of age, I just feel like I have a lot more skills than I had when I was 32 and I left that place. So that was kind of cool. But we filmed That's a show awesome. Called Before the Ultimate Fighter. You can find that on the UFC's YouTube channel, all in advance of the season debut coming up in 8 days on May 30th. And we'll be back next week to preview Albazi and Kai Kara-France, and of course, get you ready for UFC 289. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Ann. Thank you all for watching, for listening. We'll talk to you in less than a week. Until then, go later.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.